Hey, everybody, on this week's episode, dude, I'm telling you, I do these introductions every week, and every week it takes me 40 tries. It's like a free-flowing conversation that's not working out. So let's try this one more time. Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat. I sit down with the host of Smokin' and Toastin', Cruz Cruiser. I know that's an interesting name, and we kind of explain a little bit about that. Cruz has a long-standing relationship in radio and media here and all over. It's not just in Texas. You've been around for a while, for a minute. And longtime friend of the show, longtime friend of myself and the Whiskey Festival, and as I mentioned, the host of Smokin' and Toastin'. So you can find this episode and every episode of both Smokin' and Toastin' and Whiskey Neat on Google Play, iTunes, and Facebook. He actually records his live every week on Facebook, and it's phenomenally fun. So check out Smokin' and Toastin'. That's Smokin', not Smoking. Smokin' with an apostrophe on the back end, and Toastin' with an apostrophe on the back end. Phenomenally great show centered around all things spirits and beer and just phenomenal. So this week's episode is sponsored by Woodford Reserve's new distiller series, their Batch Strength. It is 125 proof powerhouse of the Woodford line. I've said this at the end of the episode. Generally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of the distiller series, and only because they do a lot of experiments. I'm a big fan of the brand overall, but I didn't like the smoked cherry one they did last year. And this, however, is apart from the norm. This is just a batch strength offering of what they make, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I know you may be wondering, what is this no-label bottle next to it? Well, we talk about it on the show, but this is a very, very interesting product that you can't get here in the U.S. and that we're going to be featuring at this year's Whiskey Social. It is a – and he doesn't know this yet at the beginning of the show, but you get to find out. This is a bottle of the Royal Navy rum that had – that stopped production in the 70s, July 31st, 1970. Is when they stopped giving sailors rum rations. I got my hands on a few bottles of this that we're going to be serving at this year's Whiskey Social. It's been sitting in a wicker-clad stone flagon for 48 years because as soon as they stopped giving it to the sailors, the only time it was brought out was for royal weddings and other special occasions of state. So it's a tremendously rare offering. I'm excited to drink it with him. He has no idea what he's getting into. It's going to be very exciting. But I'm super excited. You can get tickets to this year's Whiskey Social at HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. All the tickets are purchased on Eventbrite. You can also find the information on Facebook. Get your tickets now. And I say that because most events people wait to the last minute, but we are tracking tremendously fast. Tickets are flying. Yesterday alone we saw 30 tickets, and 30 tickets in a single day this late in the game or this middle of the game is a bit odd. So get your tickets at HoustonWhiskeySocial.com and check us out. Without further ado, Cruz Cruiser and myself, cheers. I brought you, I know you being a big beer guy, I brought you a few things. I'll give you the option. So
okay.
I think you've had Winter Warmer from Southern Star. I think I remember seeing you guys talk about it.
It's a wonderful beer.
This one in particular was aged in peated Scotch barrels, and I don't think you're a peat guy.
You know, I'm learning to enter the community of peat.
Okay.
But yes.
So, and then there's Ingenious, who they did a couple of barrel-aged stouts. They're out of Humble. On the north, have you been up there yet?
I have not been to their facility.
Have you had a few of their beers yet? Aware.
Yes, I have had. I have one of their beers. I don't remember now. So which one? So
this one was aged with Lucky Charms marshmallows.
Well, we'll have to go there.
Yes, and then this one was done with oranges and cocoa nibs, chocolate,
nice
barrel aged stout. And then B52 out of Conroe did two incredible beers. I think they're great. Any IPAs, hazy IPAs, and I think we froze the last hazy IPA on your show. I froze in your fridge.
Was that the one from Louisiana that was so good?
Yeah, Parrish.
Oh my!
So we can start with this. I want to start.
Oh my
with this.
God, that was good.
So we're definitely a spirits-based show, but I gotta have a beer with Cruz.
Well, and on our show, which you've been a guest on, what, half a dozen times now, we deal with craft beer and spirits and cigars. So it's a
you guys do everything.
Yeah, well, you know, we did. We thought, why limit ourselves?
Thinking of good podcast names, is there a podcast called Alcoholics Anonymous? There's got to be one out there, right?
I think the name may be taken. This is
orange juice,
almost like smelling a glass of orange juice. Yeah.
I get a mix of grapefruit orange, like just a mix of both, yeah, half and half.
And this is the B52.
B52, two sheets. So, or is it three sheets?
Two sheets.
Two
yes.
sheets.
So we're only two.
Yeah, so we're not quite there.
That's wonderful.
Now read the description.
Well, it's a little hard to read because it's white on yellow.
You want me to do it?
So
it's a hazy milkshake, double IPA, brewed with spelt and oats, conditioned on peach, pineapple, chamomile flowers, jasmine, pearl tea, vanilla, and milk sugar.
Okay, so now that you say the peach, I can definitely get peach on the nose too.
8% alcohol. Yeah, so and I typically –
you've been talking to Ian. You're opening with 8%.
So oh, that's, the eight, that's eight's such, the low end, buddy.
Yeah, that's exactly eight's the right. Low end. Yeah. Ian doesn't get to bring all the beers on the show anymore because when
– He'll show up with 3.11.
He shows up and the lightest thing he brings, 9.7. So but yeah, this is really interesting on the nose. It's
I hate to say it's a good breakfast beer, but it's damn good breakfast beer.
The mouthfeel is very much like an orange juice. So if you were to, you know, serve breakfast and just put this in a glass.
You never know.
Well, until
my teetotaling grandmother who doesn't like it when I drink would never know.
but this, you know, you would know, I think, once you threw back a little of it. But.
Once you tasted it. Grandma's going to say this orange juice went bad.
This orange juice tastes funny. I like this a lot. Now,
I love it.
I think there's been a lot of shade thrown at the hazy IPA.
Sure. It's the new hipster movement.
Well, and I think that's why people are in the beer community can be down on it because it's so hipsterish. It's like walking into that bar that used to be this like authentic divey place, and now it's like filled with hipsters. It's got that kind of a vibe to it. But if you just take the beer for what it is, there are some of the hazier, juicier IPAs that I think are just fantastic.
There's a recent podcast that Joe Rogan was talking about putting names on things. The hipster movement before it was the hipster movement, before you called it the hipster movement, before it got that name, was just this group of cool people who were too cool for school and didn't like anything popular.
Right.
And once you put a name on it, it becomes part of the zeitgeist. It becomes part of eventually becoming no longer cool because then it becomes cool to be hipster. You know, people will actually aspire to be
– Once everybody wants to do it.
Once everyone wants to do this thing, then all of a sudden it's been ruined by everybody.
It's just like bands. This band was so cool before everybody else found out about them, and now I don't like them anymore, even though maybe their music hasn't changed at all. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. I saw you talking to Josh, right, from B&B?
Yeah, Jeremiah.
Jeremiah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I haven't met Jeremiah yet, but I watch every episode that he's on. And, you know, I'm mentioning this during the introduction, but Cruz has and there's a long backstory as to where your show came from. Doug originally mentioned it to me 3 years ago. We just weren't ready to do a show. But Smoking and Toasting was the quintessential, like the at least the thing that put me over the edge and saying, okay, I want to do a show as well. And you guys are sponsored by B&B Butchers.
B&B Butchers. Yeah. They have a location in Houston and one in Fort Worth.
I've been on the show 5 or 6 times, and basically we get together and we drink, and very similar to what we're doing now. And Ian will be here. He couldn't make it today, but we'll get him on the show soon. It's one of my favorite things to do is just to come see you guys and have a few drinks. But I've been watching the episodes with Jeremiah, and to hear him talk he knows a lot.
Like, he really does. In fact, I'm shocked that we haven't had you both of you guys on the show at the same time because that would be just a the show would write itself. I mean, you know,
I'm looking forward to meeting him because you've got to. I'm not sure what his role is at B&B. Is he the owner, the manager?
He curates the bar.
Yeah, okay, so that makes
sense. There's a better word for it. Bar manager, I guess. I don't know.
I think spirits, but something. Spirits.
Yes. He's the guy that decides, you know, what's going to be in stock behind the bar for all spirits. I think he's involved in beers as well, although they're not as beer centric as they are spirit-centric at B&B. But he handles you know, what they're going to stock, which, you know, it's a lot like doing it at retail. It's a combination of what's going to be really cool, what's going to really enhance the vibe that we're trying to create for the restaurant, and what's going to sell.
Sure.
You know, so he has to figure out how to balance those things. But, yeah, he's extremely knowledgeable and is a really, really knowledgeable in whiskey. And that's
well, he seems to know quite about rum as well.
He does. Well, we actually did a rum show with him because we talked so much about whiskey every time that we'd had him on, and I was blown away by what he knew about rum too. Yeah. So
he seems like a great guy, and I've watched, you know, as I said, I watched every episode he's on, but watching him
I keep going back to this, by the way. This is quite good.
It's great. Well, and it's the morning time, so mm-hmm. right, we normally record these at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, so it's definitely breakfast time. But it's assumed that when you work for a bar, whether you're a manager of some sort, you at least have some knowledge of spirits. But he'll say things that catch me off guard as being far more knowledgeable and passionate about it. Meaning it goes above and beyond it being just a job for him. You can tell he enjoys mm-hmm. he really enjoys what he does.
This is what he's into, and one of the things that I've learned from him is that particularly when you're running an establishment like that, it's not just about having knowledge of the actual product. It's having knowledge of the story. Like, this is an interesting whiskey. Why do I want to try this? Not sure. Just how was it distilled and what's the, you know, the way that it was made, but why is this something that, okay, I see it's X dollars for a glass of that. Why do I want to spend that for that? Oh, that's interesting. I'll try that. And that's what he's particularly good at and communicating it to his people. The story behind the whiskey.
You mentioned the story. This particular bottle has a phenomenal story. And we'll get to it in a little bit, probably in the next segment. I'm excited to talk to you about it because knowing how passionate you are about the story and the stuff behind it, you know, and we've talked about both Jeremiah and myself are of the same belief of celebrity spirits, right? So
right, that it's a pretty shaky area.
It's a pretty shaky area. Just slapping a celebrity's name on something when they didn't distill it, they didn't make it, they don't really care about it. It's really just a money grab.
I think in some cases wine is different. I think a lot of the celebrities that have a wine are very involved in their winery. I know Jeff Tate, who is the lead singer for Queensryche, has a winery. He's extremely involved. Even Dave Matthews, his what is it, the something tree, the listening tree, the bending tree, whatever it is. He's extremely involved in his as well. But I think you're right. In many cases, in the spirits world, I think it's just you can put my name on it.
It's just so you can say that I have it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm always optimistic. You know, there's some things you can look for. And I don't know if we've covered this on the show, but for a celebrity whiskey like Bob Dylan's new Heaven's Door, there's some things to look for before ever tasting it on whether or not it's going to be a positive experience or a letdown, as you mm-hmm. might expect. And alcohol proof is one. An overly ornate package is another red flag. And then, of course, price point. But I did talk to Heaven's Door. They are coming to the Social this year. And I'm excited to sit down.
Have been terrific.
I've heard some positive things about their rye. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to sit down and at least give it a fair shot. Because ultimately it comes down to, what does it taste like?
Now, I will tell you, just a couple of episodes ago on the show, we had the J.R. Ewing whiskey.
Yeah? I missed that one.
It wasn't bad. It was pretty, you know, run-of-the-mill, I would say, in terms of whiskey. I didn't taste it and go, oh, that's not worth the money.
Sure.
But I will say I've never seen packaging that – I mean, the packaging was unbelievable.
They're pretty great.
Yeah.
They're pretty great with
really,
the packaging.
Really good with that. So but you're right. I think most of them have been letdowns. But I am also really curious about Heaven's Door. I hate the name.
Well, Bob Dylan is so beloved. It's the same. Bless his, you know, I can't even think of the right word. It's still too early in the morning, but rest in peace. But Anthony Bourdain was the face of Balvenie.
Right.
And even though he had nothing to do with production of it, Balvenie or the Balvenie, as you've had Jonathan Wingo on your show before,
yes,
is a well-beloved, mm-hmm, high-end, very good whiskey. To have someone famous tied to that but still be a super high-end product, it's not quite the same as,
right,
Bob Dylan saying, this is my whiskey.
But the bottle of Balvenie does not say Anthony Bourdain's Balvenie.
Sure, correct. Yeah, he never adopted it or claimed it as his own. He just supported the brand and, mm-hmm, was the face of the brand. And although I wish he was more present as the face of the brand, I don't think many people would necessarily – think of him as the face of the brand.
I'm not sure I would have known had I not gone to that Balvenie event,
the Rare Craft
event, seen
the
show that he did where he was talking about, and then it all kind of clicked.
Sure, you know? Sure, yeah, yeah. So until it became a thing, until you knew about it here locally, I think the vast majority of people wouldn't know that he was their face. So, I know this is coming up. Which one did you want to do next? Did you want to do the cereal or the orange?
Oh, let's try the cereal. Okay. I think that has to be.
So this is 11.5%.
Okay, well, here we go.
Okay.
So, always after me, Lucky Charms. but they are magically delicious. So we'll see if this follows suit.
So, and I know a little bit about this, but tell me about your background. What made you do the Smoking and Toasting podcast? Available on iTunes, Google Play, and all your platforms.
All your general places, yes. And it's Smoking with an N apostrophe and Toasting with an N apostrophe if you're trying to Google us. We did – I love the name of the show, but it can be difficult to Google.
To search, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I started out – I've had a reasonably long career in
– Radio.
Broadcast radio in primarily music radio. And I was a host of a number of morning shows in different markets, Boston and San Antonio and Houston, different places. When podcasting first appeared as a thing, I was in Philadelphia. I was programming a classic rock station, and I was really – it's a very good station, WMGK in Philadelphia. But I was really a little bored. Because classic rock, even though it's great music, it just doesn't change.
Yeah,
and
it's the same forever.
It's the same. Like you do a music test to once a year to freshen up the library, and you change five titles. It's just not a it's not something that's going to evolve that rapidly. So I was a little bored, and there was all this great new music coming out that I was listening to, and I was a little frustrated that I didn't have a place to share it. So I started one of the very early music podcasts, which was called Radio Free Cruise, and did about 120 episodes of that before I quit doing the podcast because it was an enormous amount of work, and started doing a streaming station, which was not quite as much work. But of course, I now had to pay licensing fees like just totally out of my pocket. And as the station grew and became one of the early really successful indie rock and alternative stations streaming. And this is all before like Pandora and Spotify and all that kind,
right,
of stuff. It became more and more expensive. And finally, I realized I was not going to probably be able to continue to support myself the way that I had been accustomed to in broadcast radio for a number of reasons. And so I kind of jumped the fence and started a digital company called RFC Media. And from that, RFC, named after Radio Free Cruise, which was the first podcast. And I did that with my partner,
Cruise,
Pat
spelled
Fant. Cruze is how you spell
it. So named after yourself.
Yeah. Named after me, yeah. And so anyway, long story short, the company began to grow and do pretty well. And once we got to the place where – we built out some infrastructure and had a studio and things like that. I decided that I really wanted to do a show about something else that I was passionate about.
Drinking
and smoking cigars.
Yeah.
And so I connected with Ian Berry, who'd been a friend of my wife's from before she and I had ever met each other. And we had him over to the house, him and his wife, and had a had an evening sitting out on the balcony smoking cigars and drinking beers. And I when they left, I said to my wife, I said, that was a show.
Yeah.
I said, if we just had microphones running, that's a show. That won't be hard to do. And so we launched the show. It was originally called Sip, Smoke, and Savor.
The name? I thought it was
the original
two words.
Name. No, it was Sip, Smoke, and Savor. And we got there's apparently a bakery or something that does chocolate covered strawberries in California who took real issue with our using that name because they're Sip, Smoke, Savor or Smoke and Savor. I don't know. It was
similar
ridiculous.
Enough.
I basically told them to go screw themselves, but my attorney thought that it would be in our best interest to change the
just
name.
Just not worth fighting.
And Ian came up with Smoking and Toasting, which I was like, I like it better. So so that's what we are. And we're rapidly approaching our 100th episode. So
wow.
That's where that came from. In fact, I will invite you. You'll be the first person invited. We want to invite everyone who's ever been on the show to be on the 100th episode.
How does that work?
We're going to get a big room somewhere and have like a whole bunch of microphones.
That'd be
and
awesome.
Just spirits and beer and
just go nuts.
And just go nuts, yeah.
You could,
it'll be a free-for-all.
So 100 episodes. Mm-hmm. How many guests do you think you've had in 100 episodes?
You know, we didn't have a lot of guests early on. So I would say probably 55, 60 guests. At this point, we have a guest about every, four out of five shows.
So maybe less.
Yeah.
Maybe like 30.
Yeah, maybe so. And we, of course, have had some repeats because some people are just great guests.
You're a dog.
You've been on a number of times. So
two of the shows I did, we did Boss Cat and then one at the Cigar Lounge, Man Cave.
Mm-hmm. At Man Cave,
which,
yes.
Is no longer around. It's now Maduro's. But and then I think the rest have been in studio. And God, your studio is great.
Well,
it's been tweaked and improved. Like every time I come in, there's a new. I was looking at the first episode I'd ever been on your show,
yeah.
And it looks so much different then than it does mm-hmm. now.
It's evolved in good ways, I think. But basically the heart of the show, and I think it's really just about this, is just about getting together and talking about things that we enjoy,
sure.
Things we're passionate about. And, you know, we don't like every single thing that we sample, but my gosh, we're sampling things that we're inclined to like. So
So
generally speaking, you know, we like it. And in my mind, and I'm sure this is part of what you think as well, a big part of what we're doing is just saying, you know, there's so much choice. When you walk into – you know, a Specs or a Total Wine or wherever.
Hundreds.
They're just everywhere. And, of course, they have great people that want to come and help you. But if you've heard about something, if you heard somebody say, you know what, if you like X, you'll love this. Or if you like this kind or style, this is a particularly good one. Those things can really help you when you're there and you're going to spend $100 on a bottle of whiskey or tequila or whatever.
I think it depends on what aisle you're on. Because Specs has this unique relationship with another distributor. And so Specs will – it's literally their incentive, their drive for a Specs product, stuff that you can only get at Specs,
mm-hmm.
to push that on somebody. So for years you had this tendency for someone to walk in, go to the whiskey aisle, bourbon aisle, say, what do I get? Lady comes over, says, hey, how can I help you? I need a recommendation on whiskey. And she points you to a Specs product. Not necessarily a good product, but a Specs product. And it's not to dog on Specs. It's just in the past, there hasn't been this wealth of a pool of people to ask from, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you've got Yelp, but Yelp, there's no Yelp for whiskey. There's no Untappd for beer, but there's not really a great app for whiskey. So it's hard up until the last couple of years with Facebook. So that's one thing I love about the Bourbon Hounds or HBS, where you can just simply – you can post a picture of something and 3,500 people are going to tell you if it's horrible or not.
Right, right.
So and then they'll also do a good job of calling out these, you know, these store owners who are pushing – their products.
You know, I've been a big fan of Specs for a long time, but I will tell you that your Facebook group, Use and Bourbon Society, is you're exactly right. Somebody will post a picture of something, and then here's all these comments, and you can tell by reading the comments, is this something I might like to try, or is this not to my particular palate? You know,
for 75 to 100. Now, some of them are better at being more constructive than others. Sure,
of course,
but at $75 a bottle, it's an overall plus just to get that feedback. Honestly. From people, so you don't waste your money.
So let me ask you this question. If you are going to try something new,
okay,
and you're looking for, let's say a whiskey or bourbon, you're looking for something, you know, you're hoping to find something that's going to be, you know, a new favorite, something you'll love.
Sure.
What price range are you starting at?
Me personally?
You personally, yeah.
For bourbon or scotch?
Let's say each.
Okay, so – for bourbon, well, I'm sorry. Let me back up. Your question is something good in general or special occasion?
I'm not talking about I'm going to go out and really splurge. I'm just saying you're shopping. You're like, I'm gonna see if I can't find something new to add to my collection that I really like.
Okay, well, something new to the collection. I've got everything below a certain price point, but for someone. Generally looking bourbon, you can find really great bourbon in the teen range, right? So for $19 or for $20, there's some really, really great. And I've talked about this before. Ezra Brooks, Buffalo Trace, you know,
Buffalo Trace, great.
It's a standard 90 proofer. Mm-hmm. And then you could go a little bit higher, the $30 range, which Eagle Rare is more like 26 to 30. Old Weller Antique. I mean, there's a lot of great whiskeys in those. You get Henry McKenna, $30. Pikesville Rye, $42. Knob Creek, both Knob Creek 120. I did a tasting a couple of weeks ago at this convention in town, and they wanted a bourbon tasting. And they didn't want anything crazy, weird, but something that they could actually find. And so I grabbed a 1 liter bottle of Knob Creek 120. $28, $30 for a liter and 120 proof, so it'll put some hair on your chest. It was phenomenal. It was the best that out of the three whiskeys we went through, that was the most popular one.
Wow.
So there's something at every price point. Scotch, I think, and I always mention this, my go-to, like if someone says, Chris, I need a recommendation for a $40-ish scotch, which is a good starting point for some, Glenmorangie Quinta Rubin or Glenmorangie La Santa. Both of those, they're finished in port barrels, and La Santa, I believe, is sherry barrels. Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. $40. It's scotch. The reason why scotch is generally more expensive is because import tax, right? So you've got to import it and get it here. Overseas, one of my favorite whiskeys, Lagavulin 16, is $50 over there. It's $100 here.
Right.
So it's an unfortunate part of importing. But the spectrum is rife with choices at every price point. So,
sure.
All right, so moving on, I wanted to we'll do the beer, and then we'll get to this.
Okay.
I'll give you a backstory while we're doing the beer.
Okay.
So for hundreds of years, there's an old tradition when it comes to rum. Do you know what that tradition is?
I don't know. I don't know the tradition.
It involves the military.
Oh, yes. It was that the sailors got a ration of rum.
That's correct.
Every day, every week, whatever it was.
So the rum rations, the tradition that's been around. Now, before rum, it was beer. But the problem is at sea, beer would go bad.
Beer would go bad, yes.
Right. So for many, many – and there's actually an old story about there's a – one I forget the name. There's one nickname for rum that involves the pickling of a dead soldier, a general that had gotten killed. They put him in a rum barrel. By the time they got the barrel back – the soldiers had drilled into it and took the rum from it, not knowing there was a body in there. So,
wow, this is good.
Yeah. So the rum ration is a tradition that goes back hundreds of years. And the Royal Navy abolished that tradition on July 31st, 1970. And that was called Black Tot Day. And on that day, they gave the sailors their last – at the time –
last ration of rum.
It was 70 milliliters, which is a little less than 2.5 ounces a day. Mm-hmm. But they would water it down with water. And that's where grog comes from because they didn't want the sailors being inebriated. So they would mix it with water, and that's what they would drink. Now, the officers would get 200 milliliters a day, and they didn't have to water it down. So at the time, they're – what they would call proof, right? So 54.5% alcohol. And on July 31st, 1970, they killed the tradition. And all this leftover rum that was stored in these stone wicker-clad flagons were put into warehouses and kept for royal weddings and that sort of thing. Well, not too long ago, they kind of released some of these to help raise some money for some military charities. And British Royal Navy rum kind of released these to auction houses, and I grabbed me some. So what you have here is Royal Navy rum that's been sitting in a wicker-clad stone flagon, 450-centiliter flagon, a huge bottle of rum that's been sitting in there for 48 years.
Wow.
So it's a very, 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 very old rum. But I thought it would be you being a big rum guy.
I am a big rum guy, yes.
I thought it would be a lot of fun to have this with you today.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're actually going to be pouring this during the VIP hour at the Whiskey Social. So there will be not this bottle, a new bottle, because the clad flagons yield about 5 to 6 bottles.
And we're at least relatively sure that none of these
– they're not available anywhere in the U.S.
But that none of these are the ones that the dead sailor body was in, correct?
Yeah, there's no dead sailor in that, I'm sure, although there's a little haziness in there. Who knows?
If Ian were here, he would pose the question right about now, how do you deal with a drunken sailor?
Yeah, well, then we're going to be drinking this in Ian's honor.
Mm. Wow.
I can taste marshmallows in that.
This – what it first reminds me of is like a chocolate milkshake or – even like hot cocoa with marshmallows. I mean, you really can pull, but there's a certain candiedness to it maybe that you don't get.
There's
in
also a thick, you know, that feeling your mouth gets after you eat just a marshmallow, mm-hmm. that waxy, oily. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that in there.
This is quite good. I mean, it's
phenomenally interesting.
This is a dessert beer, is what it is. It really is very much something where you could, if they brought out the dessert menu, and you said, no, I'm just going to have a drink. This is your dessert. This is perfect.
Can you pick up on that on the when I'm tasting it? You can hear that. Well, that's unfortunate for the listeners, but it's a very interesting beer.
I like it.
They do a whole thing centered around the Marvel Universe,
mm-hmm.
and the Infinity Gauntlet. I've got one for each Infinity Stone. This is the Soul Stone. This is the Time Stone. They've done one for each Infinity Stone and then one for the Gauntlet. So it's a phenomenal idea. The series that they did one for each one, and it's all limited release, and then it's gone forever. So I left you a couple other ones. You could take those with you, or
well,
we may get to them.
Get in a minute. Some of this because you're gonna want that.
Mm. That's delicious. Cereal marshmallows.
Mm-hmm.
So. I will get started on this. I'm really excited about this. So we actually picked up a few of these flagons. It is a very dark, very thick rum. So I hope you're prepared.
Oh, no. I'm sure I won't enjoy that. No, one of the reasons I became such a fan of rum is, first of all, I'm very much a fan of the islands in Mexico, and
sure.
That's where I love to vacation. And so the smell of rum always takes me back to some of my favorite spots in the world.
Tequila does the same thing.
Tequila does the same
reasons,
thing.
Though.
And I'm a big fan of tequila as well. The other reason, though, is that rum, being such a fan of cigars, rum almost always pairs very easily with just about any cigar. Whiskey, it can be fantastic, but I find it is pickier.
Sure.
In terms of what pairs with what.
I think that has to do with – I think that bourbon and rum are going to be the flexible. I think scotch is more particular.
Agreed.
And I think that has to do with the spectrum of flavors. So,
but very few things are as enjoyable as the right scotch with the right cigar.
Sure. You know, I think the sherryed scotches are pretty flexible, but when you get into the peated stuff, some of the more unique stuff.
But again, if you find the right pairing, it's fantastic.
Agree completely.
This is, first of all, really strong on the nose.
Super strong. Not just in alcohol proof, but in aroma.
Uh-huh.
It's very dense aggressive. Aroma.
For a rum especially, which rums can be very mellow.
Now, my wife picked up on a note that you may not agree with, but when she said it, I could smell it. Celery.
Celery. Well, yes, I wouldn't have ever said that, though.
Correct. I wouldn't have said it either. But my wife has a better nose than I do.
Mm.
Celery on it. And tasting it, I could taste celery, too.
Well, my first reaction is that I think this may be the first rum that I've ever tried that I detect a little bit of a peat.
A little smoke
vibe
to it?
To it.
Sure,
yeah,
a little phenolic note to it.
And I've had some smokier rums, but they have a tendency to be more of that sort of wood smoke, that sort of mesquite smoke kind of flavor. This is more of that almost reminding me of some whiskeys, not heavily peated, but
– just a hand of phenolic.
Just a little of that in there.
Balvenie has that. Balvenie, I think – phenols in peat can be tasted by the human palate as little as 8 parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
And Balvenie uses exactly that. They use that minimum 8 parts per million, just a light smoke to their whiskey. This is such a rich, decadent, intense rum for me. And I've been trying real hard not to drink more of it because it's so dense. It's so heavy. And I know in bottles there's a debate that's been going on for years on whether or not aging if a spirit changes in the bottle. You know, wine ages in a bottle.
Of course, yeah.
But there's no active yeast or anything like that when it comes to spirit, so the assumption is that it stops aging. But there is some papers that have written articles about old bottle effect. So it's basically a much slower process. I don't know that I detect anything, but being in a stone flagon is different than being in a bottle.
Yeah.
So 48 years sitting in a stone flagon, it makes me wonder if it's what it's done to it compared to before. But it's just a very rich and you can't get it here in the U.S. It's not available at retail. I ordered it at an auction house overseas, and I've had a tremendously fun time drinking it.
Well, I will make two observations. The first is that it actually reminds me a bit of something that we sampled on the show recently, which was the High Valley Campfire.
High West.
I'm sorry. High Valley. High West. The High West Campfire. It has just that same sort of slight peat smokiness to it. And the second thing is that As a person that likes either rum or as a whiskey drinker that maybe hasn't gotten into rum, this is a direction to go. So you really should try this at the social. If you're going, you've got to try this.
I talk about that a lot, trying to get the right introduction to other spirits. Like the 14-year-old Glenfiddich is a great – the Bourbon Reserve is a great cross from bourbon into scotch or Macallan 12.
Right.
So I think this is a great introduction. The problem is it's not an easy introduction to find, and it's a bit expensive.
Yes. But I will say, if you're going to the social.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You've got to try this.
We're going to be serving that at the social. We've got a couple bottles we'll be tasting. Essentially, I know that some people are numbers people. It works out to about $650 to $700 a bottle. So the social is all inclusive. We don't charge for anything once you get in. Once you're in the event – you can, VIP hour from 6 o'clock. You can taste anything available on the floor. And then at 7 o'clock, general admission gets in. And by then, that'll already be gone. So
Last time I left with amazing party favors. Is that likely to continue to be a tradition?
So I'm not allowed.
I realize that. Yes, I know. Right. I know.
So I'm not legally allowed to say that there'll be any party favors received for people who are VIP ticket holders.
Gotcha.
But I will say that a lot of last year will be repeated this year.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah.
For VIP ticket holders.
So I knew you couldn't be specific, but I didn't know whether.
I can't say something. You're free to say what you'd like.
Okay, well, I will just say that I really enjoyed the party favors last year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how big was the party favor? Would you say it was about 750 milliliters?
It's in the neighborhood. You know, I would say between 740, 760 milliliters, right in there somewhere. Yes.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. Those.
And I don't want to, like, you know, do anything too direct, but my party favor, I don't know, was very familiar.
It was similarly shaped than
this one. There was a very similar shape to something I've seen today.
Yes, probably a decorative bottle of some sort.
I think,
empty, maybe, mm-hmm. or not. Who
it
knows?
May or may not have been. Yes.
Yeah. So, but
no, I was so pleased with the party favor.
Yeah. So the party favors, we try to keep our events different compared to other events by doing more for the brands. And last year we gave away nearly $30,000 in party favors. So,
Well, I've said this before on our show, and I'll say it again here. Easily the best spirits event that I've been to. I just had the most fun, and the
I know Ian's wife Tiffany had quite a bit of fun.
Yes, she did. But you know, the vendors were all in great spirits. Pardon the pun. Everyone was just having a great time, and it didn't have that sort of rush through vibe to it. It was wonderful.
Well, No. I was fixing the – it was coming off. Yeah, so I didn't mean for this to like turn into necessarily a plug for the event, but we've got such a great community here locally that – and a lot of the vendors are familiar with that community. So it does – I think it's been a bit more personal, mm-hmm. a little bit more social, pardon the pun.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to – like you're having Greg Doxakis on the show mm-hmm. tomorrow.
Yes.
So Greg was our very first guest on this show, specifically this show. And I'm having dinner with Greg tonight. And Greg does – you know, Maison Ferrand if you're mm-hmm. French. But he is going to be doing rum and cognac at the social. And mm-hmm. he's familiar with the community. So when you go to these events, not only do you get to learn about these brands, or even brands you've never tasted but maybe you've heard of, but you know the person behind the table a little bit, enough to have a conversation with them and it feel like you're not just getting some sales pitch, mm-hmm. you're getting a
right.
discussion.
Well, I remember chatting with the people from his company when we were at the social last year, because my wife and I, our go-to inexpensive rum is the Plantation pineapple.
Yeah.
And I know it seems crazy, like a flavor-infused spirit would be our go-to, but the Plantation pineapple is not – it's not sweet. It's not a gimmicky, you know, flavored whiskey.
Sure.
It's just got this little hint of pineapple. It almost feels like – and I realize this is absurd, but it almost feels like it's rum that was aged in pineapple barrels.
Sure.
If that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
it's just very authentic.
Yeah.
And it's a delicious rum. And we drink that at home all the time.
Yeah,
it's my wife's favorite.
It's one of those things. They're, in general, flavored spirits are frowned upon. But mm-hmm. there are a few that get a pass because they take a different approach. It's not just injected with, you know, artificial flavorings.
Agreed.
Whitmire's does a peach whiskey here locally mm-hmm. where they involve tea. So they use peach tea to flavor the whiskey.
Infuse.
So you're drinking whiskey that has more of a peach tea note as opposed to an artificial candy peach, which is a little different than, say, your apple cinnamon vodka or whatever.
Well, Chris, I have to say this is just outstanding.
It's so interesting.
As I go, it gets better and better.
Well, hopefully we're going to drink more of this today.
It seems to mellow a little bit as you know, the first few sips – you're kind of struck by its intensity.
It's intense.
And then as you go, that intensity kind of mellows and you just get that flavor. There's such a wonderful sort of malty, maple-y flavor
maple.
Oh, wonderful.
100%. And at 109 proof, it's going to really punch you in the face with just an intensity of maple syrup,
mm-hmm.
brown sugar. I hate to give – stereotypical notes, but that's what you're getting is just a really intense rum, really intense, really old rum.
But it's very complex. It's not just, you know, most rums that are any good, you could say, have those kind of notes.
Sure. Yeah.
But this is more complex, I think, than most. And it really, there's some things sneaking up on the palate, and that's what makes it so enjoyable.
I want to commit an atrocity and make a pina colada with it. just such a regal rum that's meant for royal weddings and that's steeped in tradition, and just make a solid frozen pina colada with it.
So I have some
it's my weakness. I have some frozen beverages.
Jose Cuervo Reserva de la Familia at home, which in my opinion is my favorite tequila that I've ever tasted. It's fairly expensive, comes in the artist box and all that type of stuff. But I've been teasing my wife that I really do want to try just once making margaritas with it.
Yeah,
just to see what it would be like. Because generally speaking, you don't want to use, you know,
100%.
Just like you don't want to use this in your pina coladas. But wow, wouldn't it be great to try?
There's a Facebook group called Whiskey Blasphemy. And the group's sole purpose is to take it to the extreme of drink it how you like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll post videos of them making cocktails with $10,000 bourbon. And you're what are you doing?
A $10,000 old fashioned.
Oh, and they'll and Coke, right?
Yeah, right.
Or just some crazy, ridiculous cocktail. And just for the sake of you ready to bleep this? Just for the sake of saying fuck you to your snootiness,
mm-hmm.
And they made some. He made one time with some old, very old Fitzgerald from the 50s, and it was like in a blue Hawaiian.
That's awesome.
Liqueur.
That's
you know,
awesome.
And I just thought, okay. I mean, if you got the money, man, I would probably do something like that just for the story.
Yeah.
But
again,
in the meantime, the farthest I might go is make a pina colada with this.
Well, let me tell you, this is outstanding, and maybe
cheers,
one of the best things we've tasted together, in my opinion.
I hate that Ian couldn't make it. I know how Ian is. Ian would thoroughly enjoy this, and his commentary would be just as colorful.
Ian, who's my partner on the show, would be he'd be freaking out over this. And I'm kind of the rum guy. He's more the whiskey guy. Like
sure,
I'm kind of the rum guy, but he would be going insane over this. Now we tasted at B&B with our friend Jeremiah. We tasted
the
rum there.
Here, by the way, I got to get both.
Yes.
Mics.
Oh,
can we do a four mic setup? Is that possible?
Yeah,
maybe?
We can figure that out.
Yeah,
yeah.
Jeremiah, Ian, and
Jeremiah,
you, and that's just go spirits crazy.
It would be fantastic. So we tasted a rum there, the name of which will come to me in a moment. But we tasted a rum there that was incredibly expensive.
Was that the
and it was
Don
the,
Q or something, that 25-year-old?
Yes, the 25 or 26-year-old, I don't remember, was just fantastic. And I said at that point, that's the best rum I'd ever tasted. But I don't know about what this may give it a run for its money.
A little side-by-side?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very different in style, but.
Right. It's skipping me at the moment. Not Don Q, not Don Julio. Don Julio's a tequila, but.
I'll think of it. It's about 5-6 episodes ago.
Yeah. About five. Justin, and you guys actually, okay, yeah, that was indoors because you actually did the recent patio episode, Smoking Cigars, which, again, I got to get a patio set up. Because doing an episode in a lounge or smoking a cigar would just be phenomenal.
Would be great fun.
We had on Alan Denny last week, right? Last week? And now he's with E.P. Carrillo. So E.P. Carrillo historically has done just very mediocre cigars. They've been around for a long time, and they just were inconsistent for whatever reason. But the last two releases, the La Historia and the Encore, were so well done. With the Encore being, I would say, contender for Cigar of the Year.
Wow.
And then they've got something new coming out that I haven't seen yet. It was just they've stepped their game up and exceeded beyond their past transgressions.
I love it. I love when that happens. You know, when you see someone that has not historically created that product at the level that you really, you know, that you really are looking
respect,
for.
Respect, yeah.
And then they step up and deliver one. And it's like, oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, because historically you see a decline once something becomes massively popular, right?
Well, yeah.
You see it with whiskeys all the time.
I've had Romeo and Julieta's. In fact, I reviewed one on the show recently. It's like this used to be a brand that was revered, not just the Cuban ones, but also the Dominican, and now they're making them in Nicaragua and other countries. It's like – disappointing. Not worth the $10 that cigar costs, because I can take that same $10 and spend it on another cigar that'll blow your mind.
Sure.
And that's sort of the comparative thing. And it's not just that it's different. It's just not as good. And that happens a lot with the bigger brand names, is over time they're making so many cigars or bottles of whiskey or whatever that you wonder if they can keep the same quality.
So and I'm going to give TX a plug here, because TX whiskey
is – I love TX whiskey.
See, and it's generally frowned upon, because their TX blended is got vodka in it. It's got neutral grain spirits, and it's – or grain neutral spirits, depending on whether or not you work in the industry. And vanilla packet, vanilla flavoring. Mm-hmm. It's very popular amongst the average consumer. The connoisseur gives it a hard time because it's flavored and it's got vodka in it. But this massively popular brand 2 years ago decided to put out a bourbon. Mm-hmm. Not just a bourbon, mm-hmm. a four-year-old bourbon, a straight bourbon. Mm-hmm. And it was their own, like, to move in that direction of trying to put out a quality. Now, it wasn't that great. It kind of tasted like wet dog. But they are moving in that right direction, mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. improvement. So it's something that you don't see every day. You don't see that consistency when you become super massively, and they are. They're very popular.
So how does someone like Buffalo Trace or Eagle Rare, they're in big demand, they're not an expensive product, how do they maintain the quality over time?
So they're getting younger and younger with their releases. They remove the age statement, mm-hmm. Off a few brands that used to be older. Eagle Rare is still 10 years old. Nope, hold on. Yeah, it's still 10 years old. It's now on the back. But they do what they call so I'll give you an example. Eagle Rare used to be single barrel. Now it's no longer a single barrel. It's a batched barrel. So they have their old product that is known to be good, mm-hmm. sitting in reserves, and they'll taste it in comparison to the new batches to maintain that quality. So there's a lot of effort put into, if we're going to be blending barrels and maybe blending off a few bad ones in the mix to kind of even it out, they'll taste it to ensure it maintains. And it's still a phenomenally great $26 bourbon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 10 years old, $26. What's there to complain about? It becomes harder and harder to maintain that quality, sure.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. But what fun to try. I mean, you know what I mean? That would be the job to have. If you knew what you were doing, obviously.
Sure,
you
know? Sure. And I don't know how any of them maintain sobriety.
You can't even – I can't even imagine. And don't give me the old taste it and then spit it out thing. You cannot do that with a whiskey and really experience the full flavor and aroma of the whiskey.
I have to disagree legally because
of
the events.
Yes, yes.
because I had recently posted about this. There are a few absolute – horror stories when it comes to alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. You have to make sure people maintain sobriety. And the secret to these events, right? So we promote and say there's going to be 350 whiskeys this year. There were 300 last year, more than twice any other event in the state. Mm-hmm. And we said, let's put a few more on there, right? So not only are we twice, now we're vastly approaching, three times the amount of any other event. And
obviously you can't sample everything there.
That's correct. Yes. So obviously you can't sample everything there, even at half ounce pours. So what we do is at every single table all throughout the event are something that the wine industry refers to as dump buckets. Mm-hmm. Taste it, sip it, chew it, maybe swallow a little bit, but it's half an ounce. Spit the rest out, right? And really, let's say I have half an ounce in here. I can take a nip, experience it, really taste the intensity of that rum. And then I've got the rest. I can just simply – and I know that some people have a hard time doing that. I grew up poor. So when we went to someone's house or we went to a restaurant and there was fajitas on the table, mm-hmm. or something, mm-hmm. I made sure that every – ounce of it went into my body.
Absolutely.
I have this – if you grew up like I did, you have a hard time not consuming something that you may not see for a while, mm-hmm. right? So whether it was cake, cookies
– Or this.
So I get the need or the urge to say, okay, this has to be a part of me. I have to consume it so that it is ingrained into my DNA. But moderation. Make sure you dump –
Moderation is important.
Dump out more than you need to. And that doesn't mean that it's a bad whiskey. Knowing Greg's going to bring some incredible stuff from Plantation and from Pierre Ferrand. He brought a 30-year-old cognac last year. Mm. The and I have horrible French pronunciation, but the Selection d'Anges is a 30-year-old cognac, and it's insanely hard not to swallow it. But you know, swallow what you can, and then okay, or make them go lighter on the pour so you don't feel, you know, it's just
yes.
So if you're gonna enjoy what you can, because I know Gene put in a good effort and hit 37 whiskeys last year, which is incredible. Out of 300 whiskeys, the fact that he hit 37 and still maintained the legal sobriety,
yes,
or so I'm saying officially.
Well, I also would mention you guys are partnering, or at least in a promotional partnership with Uber, correct?
Yeah, so we partnered with Uber. For people's first ride, up to $15 is on us.
That's great.
I've reached out to Lyft as well, so we're working on it. I'm also trying to work with a hotel in the area so that if people need to stay the night, they can stay the night. So it's just we want to make it possible for you to try something new and fun and interesting and really branch out while still being safe to, you know, because you don't – here's the thing. If something bad happens and this event goes away and we want something fun for the city, we want something fun for the state. We had guys last year. We had a couple guys drive from Oklahoma. We had some drive from Louisiana. We had guys from Dallas, guys from New Mexico that drove all the way here for a whiskey event. It's a incredible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to preserve that while still, you know, maintaining diversity and interesting stuff, you know.
You may have a hard time getting me out of the VIP room where this is located, because this is just – this is getting better and better.
We haven't found out exactly where we plan to put that yet. It's dessert. It's pancake syrup.
All right.
I don't know what we're going to do. So, all right. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's your show, so yep. You get to pick.
Are you a rye guy?
What?
A rye guy?
I enjoy a good rye, yes.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. So you get two options here. You had a similar commemorative item that you took home last year. Was it – I don't think it was in the green label, though.
I don't remember where I got it, but I don't think the label was green.
Yeah. So this is a really great –
the label was brown.
Okay. So – or red, like a burgundy.
Reddish, yes,
yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So try this first. This is the Houston Bourbon Consortium's rye, which we had our buddy on what was his name? Morgan Weber. Yeah, we had Morgan Weber on and Kevin Floyd. Oh, yeah. So this is it's a 6-year-old rye from Knob Creek. They recently released the program. We actually did a barrel pick of that. That'll be released Saturday at Total Wine around Houston. So it's a new program for them. They just released it this year. Actually, they did a couple barrel picks last year. Phenomenally interesting rye.
What is going on with this distillery? Because they are popping up everywhere as so respected, so such surprisingly good quality for the price. Has Knob Creek always been this good?
So Knob Creek is part of the Beam line, and I think they shine at 120 proof. This is their rye at 115 proof.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing phenomenal stuff, and I believe – I'm not sure when Knob Creek was exactly released, but I think it might have been 92 along with their other –
right. It's not that old of a brand.
Yeah. I think it was released along with Basil Hayden's – and what was the other one? They did a bunch of releases in 92. Baker's was a little before that. But yeah, Knob Creek was 92. I'm almost positive. But yeah, it's just a phenomenal – it's their phenomenal core range. Now, their core range is the Beam White Label. everyone's familiar with it, been around you know, generations. But this, I think Knob Creek shines at both the bourbon and the rye at that 115, 120 proof.
This I really like. Maybe one of the best ryes I've had in a while. It is it's not quite so barnyardish as some ryes can be. Some ryes you get that hay and corn so distinctly that it and some people that's what they like about rye. I understand that. But this, to me, those flavors are a little more subtle. They're there, but they're a little more subtle, and it's in the mix a little more with that sort of, you know, malted sort of
I think it
richness.
Has I think it's more deeper brown sugar notes, more closer to bourbon than your typical whistle pig.
Which may be why I like this so much, because I enjoy rye occasionally, but I would probably lean more towards bourbon just in general where my palate is. You know?
Rye is a lot more diverse of a category. Bourbon's very specific as to what you can and can't do to it.
Right.
Rye, there are ryes with sherry in it. Mm-hmm. Right, I mean, directly added to it, the Alberta Dark Rye is a great $26 bottle of rye, but it's got, I think, 4% Grandad and 1% sherry added directly to the bottle, and just that 1% sherry gives it this intense, deep, dark color to it. Whistle Pig Alberta Rye is like you said, hay color, golden,
and it's very good, but it is also very distinct in that flavoring.
Now, see, that's $10 or 10 years old. Whistle Pig's Alberta Dark or Whistle Pig's Rye is 10 years. This is 6 years and about half the price for a higher proof, 115 proof, a little bit more concentrated flavors, a little bit more deeper, darker. I'm a big fan. And of course, I love the guys over at 8 Row Flint and now UB Preserve because Underbelly Went is no longer around.
Very warm.
I'm still milking that rum.
Yes.
Did you get around to this? The Woodford Reserve?
Well, you and I sampled a little bit of it.
Little before. The show. Yes. So we'll taste this in the last segment. Is this the last segment? This is the last segment.
So we should taste it
so
now.
So we should taste that now. Yeah.
Yes, we absolutely should. We've got like 3 or 4 minutes left. Yeah. So I would just say. This has all been good. Like, there hasn't been anything we've tasted today that I didn't, that I wasn't really, really drawn to. Of course, you know your stuff, so.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just someone who likes to drink, so I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in any way, shape, or form, but it's something that this right here, the only thing missing from this conversation is a few other people.
Yes.
And a cigar.
And a cigar.
Yes. And a cigar. So it's my favorite part. And you know, they say with some artists they will they'll do two movies for their career and then one for
like one for them,
but one for them, one for their own personal pleasure, right? And I love having brands in here to talk about their products and kind of introduce people to new things. But I love having crews sitting across from the table from me and just having a conversation with a friend.
Well, this is. In my opinion, this is what all of this is about anyway. I've never been one, although I will have something wonderful to drink when I'm at home by myself. But when I enjoy drinking is when I'm around other people, when it becomes part of what fuels the conversation and the word fellowship doesn't seem right here, but you know what I'm talking about. When it fuels that camaraderie between people, you know?
I've been meaning to have I don't want to say a controversial episode, but just a real conversation episode where we get someone in, we talk a little politics, maybe we talk a little something, religions, I don't care.
All the stuff you're not supposed to talk about.
All the stuff you're not supposed to talk about, yeah. And I'll definitely alienate some people, but I really enjoyed we had Steve Platts in from NASA. He's the chief deputy officer, chief deputy scientist of the human research program over at NASA. He's responsible for getting human bodies to Mars, making sure that we survive the journey. Yeah. And we talked a little bit about the current environment of misinformation. You know, there's a whole movement out there of flat earthers, people who believe the earth is flat. I like the idea of doing a show simply around just having a raw conversation. Maybe we do it.
And having the drinks.
Sure. And having the drinks. Yeah, yeah. Maybe we do it. Maybe we do an episode where this will be the only one that doesn't go on radio. I don't.
The bonus episode.
A bonus episode, sure.
At Smoking and Toasting, we have the lost episode. There was an episode where I was apparently so bitter at our having to change the name that the producers wouldn't let me post it.
Bobby?
So, yes, it was Bobby, who was our producer at the time, nixed the episode. So it is the lost episode.
Do you still have it somewhere?
Somewhere, yes.
You should release it.
We totally should release it.
You were just shitty and upset. And
I was completely out of my mind. Just like
furious.
Bobby used the word bitter.
Yeah. Well, bitter's okay.
Oh, bitter. Bitter can be great. You don't want bitter in a cigar, but boy, in
sure.
In drinks, bitter
or
can be good.
Or in a wife.
Yeah.
So we.
Yes.
I'm a huge Bobby fan, but Bobby does come from the school of old school radio and the things you should and shouldn't talk and this and that and the idea of the podcast world being a free range conversation with little to no constraints is a hard transition. So
yeah.
I think a bitter episode, especially when did you change it? Episode?
Oh, it would have been in the 30s.
30s. Yeah. So you were established then. You know, you're a little bit more comfortable. I don't think it would have necessarily been a bad episode to release, depending on what you said. I haven't heard it.
I thought it was fine. I didn't think I was that out of line. But then again, it was me and, you know, reminds me of the best line ever. On the gun debate, no matter where you stand on the gun debate, you can appreciate this. There's an episode of The Simpsons where Homer goes to his local Walmart or whatever the Simpsons equivalent of Walmart is to buy a gun. And they go and he says, I want that one. And the guy says, okay. He goes, here's your form. Fill this out and you can come back and get your gun in 7 days. And Homer says, 7 days? But I'm mad now.
Yeah. Perfect.
That's kind of how I was in that episode.
Sure,
that was
sure.
I should have had the 7-day cooling off period.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was mad then.
It reminds me of a movie that just came out recently with Bruce Willis. His acting range is limited to. I know we're running out of time. Give me a few. Yeah. So his acting range is limited, but he just did one called. Basically, there's a home invasion gone wrong, and his wife and daughter get hurt, and he goes on a killing spree and. And he's a surgeon. He's never owned a gun before. And he goes to buy a gun from a gun range. And they were like, fill out this background form, but we don't really check. You know,
yeah,
just,
right.
Just like making it very apparent how easy it is for him to get a gun. Yeah. So, Cruz, thank you so much for coming.
A pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Check out Smoking and Toasting on iTunes, Google Play. And they do every single episode live on Facebook. It's freaking phenomenal. So, and what the great thing about that is the show is generally about an hour long. But on Facebook Live, you see the parts in between segments. It's phenomenal. So
warts and all, we call it.
Yeah, and I'll be back on there soon. So Smoking and Toasting, that's SMOKIN apostrophe, toasting, not toasting. Same thing. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks.